All right. Welcome to another episode of Beer Opinions Podcast. My name is Pat Berger from Patty Long's and Kaiser Tiger. And with me, as always, is Chris Bruce White of the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Bruce, how are we doing?
Doing well, man. Enjoying this 60 degree day. I'll even take the rain.
Yeah, yeah. We should talk about the weather since it's no one listening right now has any idea what the weather on Thursday, January 11th is in Chicago. Yeah. But it's incredibly warm here. Our curling court is a pool right now.
Oh, yeah. Not good for curling.
Not good for curling.
Yeah, no. Sorry, man.
No, it's okay.
I saw industry night. It looked like it was bumping.
It was very bumping. We had a great industry curling night on Monday and had 16 teams show up and everyone had a good time. That's all that matters. And it was a blast. That's I shout out to the champions, the Cicerone team, known as James Curl Jones. They are the champions again. They won it a couple years ago too. So, you know, not only smart, but apparently they know how to throw some stones.
All right. All right.
But you know, won't hear me tell them that because they're a little full of themselves right now.
Yeah.
Cicerones.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a very special podcast. We have a guest, a good friend of mine, the beer director at the Publican Restaurants, Mr. Adam Vavrick. Adam, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, not only of the show, but of the name, Beer Opinions. I'm a huge fan of portmanteaus. Anytime you can squish two words together, it will save you literally seconds over the course of your lifetime.
It does. I know.
Although, if I may.
You may.
Why not go with open beers? Because then it's both a portmanteau and also open beers.
Open beers. All right. Well, we'll
it's a terrible idea.
We'll send that to the focus group, see what they say. Oh, they came back. It's no.
It's no. Nice. Good. How did you get market research done that fast? That's amazing.
The power of the internet. So
seriously, though, thanks a lot for having me. We've talked about it for a while, and I really appreciate it. It's nice to be able to get over here.
Thank you for coming. So let's delve into it, Adam. You have what I think is probably a dream job for a lot of our listeners out here. And as the beer director for the very well-respected Publican group of restaurants, you have the Publican, Publican Anchor, and Publican Quality Meats. Am I missing any of them?
And Publican Tavern at O'Hare.
Oh, I knew I was. Yes. And Publican Tavern at O'Hare.
I consult for the restaurant group, other than that. They're not technically under me. So, you know, if Big Star needs anything, or if, you know, Doves or Blackbird needs anything, they call me and I help with draft stuff or whatever they might need beer-wise.
Sweet. Yeah. So that's one-off hospitality, by the way, of very well-respected restaurant group here in Chicago.
Yeah.
I bow down to them. What they do it's really extraordinary. Anyway, your entire job, you know, a lot of us wear a lot of different hats in this industry, and we, you know, sometimes we're unplugging a toilet or breaking up a fight in the kitchen, and sometimes we're buying beer. But, you know, beer tends to be maybe not the, you know, people always come to me, I want to do what you do. I'm like, well, that's great. It takes up about 8 hours of my work week, you know, where I'm really concentrating on beer, and the rest of it I'm, you know, doing all sorts of horrible things, talking to lawyers and the city. And, you know, you are just concentrating on beer.
Yeah, by and large. I'm nothing if not tenacious. And so while beer is my main focal point, I've kind of taken it upon myself to learn a lot of things that are outside of the scope of my job. I staged in the kitchen on Tuesday, as an example, because I went in early and I got all of the opening manager stuff done. Our general manager's on vacation right now, so I'm taking manager shifts, which means all the same crap, unplugging toilets, like all that good stuff. And mopping up stuff after the coffee machine got fixed and you know, counting the bank and getting servers set up for, you know.
I hope the chefs were duly, you know, unimpressed with you. Calling you beer boy and stuff like that, I would hope.
No, because I buy
Chop those onions faster, beer boy. Yeah. That's
I buy their beer.
Right. They have to be careful.
You do hold you hold the reins of the beer.
You know, and I get along really well with back of house, honestly, just because I have that sort of it's a team. Just because my job says beer doesn't mean I'm not going to come in there and peel garlic for 3 hours if you really needed it, kind of thing. So
it's a good idea to stay on the good side of the back of the house, because they are making your food.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. They're really what drives it. But yeah, I mean, beer does really comprise the majority of my responsibilities, and my weeks are very strange. I don't really have a schedule. I kind of make my own hours, and I have a routine that I get into. I like to be, Mondays I come in and I do orders for Publican, and I check on everything that happened over the weekend. And then I run over to Anchor and I do orders there, and I check in on everything that happened over the weekend. And then I check in with the Wicker Park campus, and then usually I'll just fuck off for the day, which is, I'm so happy I can cuss on this podcast.
Fucking right.
It's so great. And then, like Fridays and Saturdays, I'm almost always at Publican for a full shift, starting in the early afternoon all the way through just about the close of service.
Are you doing like a real beer somm kind of thing where you're table visiting?
Oh, yeah. I touch tables. I do beer pairings for people that want it. I go around and say hello. I make sure that, the beers are going out to Publican standards and my standards, which are pretty closely linked. Well, they're 100% linked now.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I like doing bottle service and talking about the beers that we have. I like to... if I see somebody order something that I think is really neat and I can see that they're thinking about it, or even if they're not, I'll just bring a little beer pairing over. Be like, you've got the Fluke, which is in a pan sauce. We're going to do this, and I'm going to just bring a little sample of beer for you to drink and to have that as an experience. It's just fun. I love that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
And that's like an extra touch that really goes a long way that people probably aren't as familiar with, in the beer context.
Very much so. I mean, at Publican, we sort of have... 10 years. I really like to say that I stand on the shoulders of giants with Publican. I mean, I have my own 10-year beer career previous to coming to Publican, but the whole restaurant thing is fairly new to me. But hospitality is something that I've always kind of understood, just because I pulled the same kind of stuff at Binny's at my previous employer, where I would just open bottles up and just walk around the department and hand them out for people to try, because I'm like, this is fucking great. You have to have this. You're not going to spend $30 on a bottle. Try it anyway, and then, they'd buy it, so.
Yeah. Let's talk about your previous career. Give us a little rundown of where you were working before. I know a little bit, but how'd you get started in beer?
Yeah.
And when I was doing, I just want to preface this. This is I love this wine, I believe it was Wine Spectator magazine.
Wine Enthusiast, yeah.
Wine Enthusiast, that's right. I was doing a little research, and they call you the Beer Nerd's Beer Nerd. Is that right?
Yep, that was something like that.
40 under 40, it was one of those types of lists.
Yeah, it's a little embarrassing, but it's also, I would say, probably one of the highest honors I've received within my career this year, or last year, 2017. Wine Enthusiast chose me as one of their 40 under 40 tastemakers, which... they don't do a lot of beer people at Wine Enthusiast. Like they've selected Pat Fahey from Cicerone, who else?
He must have been 20 under 20.
Nice. Well, he looks about 16. Sorry, Pat.
Past guest on the show.
But like Patrick Rue from the brewery. What's her name? The brewmaster from 10 Barrel, she was on there, Hillary, I think, and a few other people.
Yeah.
But, it was cool, and I got to go out to New York and do, a photo shoot, which was really weird. They didn't have any beer at the photo shoot, so I called our PR company guy that lived in Brooklyn, and I was like, hey, I need you to come down to Chelsea with a six-pack of beer. He's like, you're fucking kidding. It was great. So I was just sitting there walking around drinking Pet Nat wine. Kind of like being like, so you guys need beer sponsors next year.
A good photographer. They made you look cool.
It's the first time I've ever looked good in my life. I generally have a face and demeanor for radio, so it was
a good photo.
It was. Thank you. So I got into beer kind of by accident. I kind of fell backwards into it. My track was that I used to work in the audio industry, doing sound design, synthesizer programming, engineering, et cetera, and studios for artists and producers and so on. Basically, I would go into a studio and they would have an army of gear, and they would say, I need bass sounds, I need lead sounds, I need weird atmospheric shit, I need drum packs that are mapped to this keyboard or whatever. And I would do that, and it paid extraordinarily well. And, you know, I have stuff on records out there, which is kind of cool. Nothing ever credited because I was just like a behind the scenes guy, but it was neat to hear that stuff. And then around like 2001, 2002, a lot of the software got more and more advanced. And these software instruments would come with, rather than like 40 sounds and programming abilities, they'd come with 512 sounds or 1,000 sounds. And suddenly my $17 or $18 an hour cash under the table didn't seem as lucrative as spending $200 on a single program and having just a library of sounds. And the people that were still getting the work were really high-end musicians that I couldn't compete with. And so I ended up I moved to Chicago and tried to get studio work, and it didn't work. There were just no studios that were hiring at that time for what I did. And I ended up going back to Borders Books. And Borders was, you know, I'd worked as a manager at Borders and back in D.C. And, you know, I'd gotten a job at the Lincolnwood location and as an inventory supervisor kind of thing. And whatever, it paid the bills. And then I had a coworker who was homebrewing. And I guess at that time, it was probably 06 or 07 or something like that. I was living in a little studio apartment at Lunt and Glenwood in Rogers Park, next to a crack house. And it was a great little apartment, little studio apartment. And there was this little bodega under the Morcell tracks, and they had Bombers of Fat Tire for $3.99. And I was like, that's awesome, I'll buy that. And I did, and it was great. And that was my you know, I'd get out of work and I'd get a Bomber, a Fat Tire, or I'd go to the Red Line Tap and drink pints of Alpha King or whatever. I don't know if that was the first craft beer I had, but it was
the old Red Line Tap.
Right?
That was the old Roy's.
Yeah, there you go.
I was on the pool team.
No kidding.
Back in college.
That's so Roy's, funny.
Yeah.
But so I started drinking beer there, and then, you know, I'd bring home 12 packs of Blue Moon because that was really all you could find, or 6 packs of Honkers or whatever. And like, I think I can still remember when 302 got introduced, or at least I remember when it was sort of a newish beer. I don't know if I was actually around for that, but anyway, so there was this local liquor store up the street from me called Rogers Park Fine Wines and Spirits, owned by a gentleman by the name of Henry Unit, who's amazing. He's still there. He tastes everything that comes into his store, and he's extraordinarily selective. He's awesome. Old school Chicago liquor store guy. And I would go in there and would buy my beer there, and we kind of had a little deal for a while where if I wanted him to order something for me, I would buy half the case. That was the deal. So if I was like, hey, I would like to try this Southern Tier Finn and Matt's Pale Ale, he would bring in a case of it, and I would buy two of the 6 packs, and then he would sell the other two. And after a while, he had a pretty decent beer selection. I mean, he did before, but it was a little bit more selected, I guess. And it was there that I met Randy Mosher.
Oh, yeah.
Who also lived in the neighborhood. And I went homebrewed with him. This person that I knew at Borders, you know, had brought me an oatmeal stout that she had homebrewed. And I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. You made this? So then I ordered in a bunch of homebrew books to Borders and then volunteered for the overnight shift so that I could just read all night. And I ended up reading, like, Designing Great Beers by Ray Daniels and John Palmer and, you know, all the seminal, Brew Like a Monk, all the seminal brewing tracts, and then bought myself a homebrew kit and so on. So all this is happening at the same time. Borders lets me go. Because they were on their way out, and I already, yep, thankfully had bought my homebrew kit, and my first few batches were extract, and they sucked. They were so bad. And then I was like, well, I may as well double down on this, and I bought an Igloo cooler and made an all-grain setup and made a double IPA after that brew day with Randy, and it was really good. I modeled it on off of Southern Tier's Unearthly, which was one of those classic double IPAs that you'd find. It was like 2-row Carafoam and a little bit of caramel malt, Cascade Chinook Centennial, ale yeast, that's it. And I nailed the beer. It was really good. And I brought it into Henry one day just to bring a bottle. And he was like, this is great. You should get a real job in the beer industry. I was like, well, what do I do? He's like, call Sam's. And for those that are not in Chicago that might be listening to this, Sam's Wines and Spirits was an institution. It was a liquor store, a family-owned liquor store that started out on Halsted Avenue and then moved over to Lincoln Park at North and Clybourne. And it was a giant...
I mean, it was the biggest liquor store I had ever seen when I first walked in there. I remember taking my dad there because he came to visit. And I was like, oh, you got to see this liquor store. And he was just like, oh, my God.
Yep. And the two big rivalries were Sam's and Binny's. And, you know, Sam's didn't need me at the Lincoln Park store, but they tried my beer. They heard me talk and they were like, cool, we'll just hire you at the Highland Park store. I'm like, great. So I went to the Highland Park store and I was there for about a year. And much as I do, I learned as much as I could. Cause I mean, it's a liquor store in Highland Park, you know? Before long I was buying the beer for that department. And I was also helping out in wine and selling scotch and going on deliveries and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it's kind of funny. The liquor buyer at Sam's refused to bring in this one scotch that I really wanted to buy. And I called over to the Binnie's across the street on across 41. I was like, hey, do you guys have this? They're like, yeah, I think we've got a couple bottles. I'm like, great. So I took my lunch break and I went over to Binnie's. And I was like, hey, do you guys have the Port Charlotte PC5? They're like, yeah, you called? And I was like, yeah. They're like, cool, we set one aside for you. Here you go. I'm like, awesome. Started talking to this guy about scotch. Turns out he's the GM. He's like, wow, you really know your scotch. I was like, yeah, I do okay. He's like, do you want a job? I was like, what? I kind of have one. And I showed him my Sam's badge. And he kind of laughed and, you know, introduced myself and whatever and went back. And then I got a phone call like 2 weeks later. They tracked me down and brought me in for an interview. And, it was like a 4-hour interview. And at the end of it, they were like, well, you know, we're going to make you this offer to come in and be our beer guy. I don't remember what location it was, but they were like, you can be our beer guy. Maybe Schaumburg. I don't know. But you can be the beer guy and we're going to pay you this, but you have to take your lip ring out. And I was like, nope, have a great fucking day. And I 86'd that. I left. And they were kind of weird. They were like, you don't want to, you know, we believe in professionalism. And I was like, cool, professionalism's how you treat people, not how you look. And so I told him to pound sand. But word had got around that I had interviewed to the old, I guess he was president of Sam's. And he called me and he was like, hey, did you interview with Binny's? I was like, yep. He's like, are you going to go there? I'm like, depends. He's like, what'd they offer you? I told him. He's like, cool, we're going to fire the dude at Lincoln Park today and you start tomorrow. And here's $2 more. And so just like that, I started at the Lincoln Park location, which was an $80 million store. And, wow. You know, just it was insane. And I'd never bought for anything really like that. Huh. And there was a lot of, you know, what is dummy?
What kind of buying do you do for a store that size? Like how much beer is coming in there a week?
Well, Sam's was weird because we were sort of on the tail end of the lifespan of that company. Vinny's bought us about a year later, October 20th of 2009. But, I mean, it was at the
well,
time.
Well, then even as Vinny's, you know, because you stayed on, obviously, when Vinny's bought and...
kept the lip ring, too.
Kept the lip ring somehow, yeah. And, you know, really molded that store into, you know... you know, kind of the example of what a beer store could possibly be.
Yeah.
Right. How much beer was going through? Do you even know?
Thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon millions of cases. It was crazy. I mean, it was volume, but the one thing that I really did, I think,
mean, when you're buying, let's say, you know, I assume here, but let's. Your number one beer was probably Miller Lite still, right?
For a long time, up until about 2011 or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much Miller Lite would you buy at a time?
Pallets.
Pallets, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Pallets.
Pallets.
Pallets, multiple. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And you know, it was fun because, you know, I attribute a lot of my success to kind of viewing the market the way it was moving. I mean, I, you know, back at Henry's store at Rogers Park Fine Wines and Spirits, I met Gabriel from Half Acre, who was doing a tasting for that original Half Acre lager that was brewed up at Sand Creek. And then, you know, I bought pallets of Gumball Head back in the day, which pissed a lot of people off when they were sort of going through their not having enough beer uh-huh. kind of thing. If you look on my Facebook page, actually, years and years and years ago, there's a stack of Gumball Head that was a pallet buy. And I think it made so many people mad that they just 86 pallet buys completely. But anyway, I mean...
Well, Benny's is,
That was still Sam's.
That was still Sam's?
Yeah, I believe it was still Sam's. But to answer your question, you know, the orders took me a couple hours to do. And I mean, it was, and I was pretty meticulous. I always needed commodity items, and I was always fine with that. And I was fine with positioning them the way that they needed to be. Things like flats of Miller Lite, you know, 24-pack cans, or 12-packs of Bud Light, or 12-pack bottle of Heineken, or whatever. It was fine. You know, that was bread and butter. I never mm-hmm. ever, you know, spit in the face of that stuff. It got great cooler space placement and so on. But all that allowed me to play around with everything else, you know. Making sure that was positioned kept corporate off my back. Mm-hmm. And kept a certain amount of money continually rolling in so that I could, you know, call up a brewery and be like, hey, you have no idea who I am. Would you maybe send some beer to Chicago? And they would. And suddenly we had beer, you know. A lot of breweries that entered into that market and that are into the market between, you know, 2009 and we'll say 2011, 2012, a lot of that was driven by just the sheer volume that IRI data was showing. I mean, at that time, you could see Mariano's, or I guess, no, it would have been Dominic's at the time, or whatever. What was the other one? It was
Jewel, the Jewels.
So Jewel Osco's and whatever. They were starting to kind of catch on to what I think we were doing, and Vinny's was finally kind of pulling out of the suburbs and sort of understanding the city kind of driving that business. And yeah. So everybody started stacking up Lagunitas and Goose Island and so on, and really allowed some of the breweries that kind of saw the writing on that wall to do that and go for that bulk, not bulk, I don't want to say like bulk packaging like Costco, but that volume-based package and understanding that, you know, you can turn a lot of product that way.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting just kind of learning about your journey, because I remember the same thing, and I think we take it for advantage now. 10 years ago, it was so much different in Chicago.
Yep.
Like you're talking about, you remembered when 312 was that really struck me. I mean, isn't it crazy, you know, how far we've come now? But even you, it must have been wild for you to kind of not only see this happen, but also in a sense drive it as well during that time when craft beer was just really making its first major inroads in some time in Chicago.
It was really cool. And I mean, there were a lot of things that I did in those late years at Sam's and the early years in my Binny's career that I did a lot of stuff that nobody at Binny's really understood what the fuck I was doing. Like, I remember getting screamed at, and I mean screamed at, for buying the last remaining cases of Dreyfentinen in the market. I bought all of them that Windy City had when Shelton Brothers pulled, and I think it was like 16 or 17 cases of Oud Goose and Oud Creek and everything, and I was just like, it's not going to go bad. Yeah. And I mean, but these were expensive cases. Like, yeah, you didn't see $20, $30 bottles of beer on the shelf at all. You know, everything right. was still so very low. And I mean, we had the cachet of the you know, the largest selection, so people would expect to see things they wouldn't see elsewhere. As opposed to, I mean, the only other person really doing it was like Christina at West Lakeview Liquors. And she was so much more selective about it. And it's kind of funny how now I've kind of come full circle and now I have to be as selective as she was back then. And then the only other one was like Randy at Archer Liquors, that were sort of like the where you could get stuff like that. But I bought all this beer and we had Dreyfentinen forever, and it was great because we were known to be the place that you could go and get these really cool Belgian sour beers. And this is when Cantillon was still a shelf beer, which is, I mean, I have old pictures of like my Cantillon shelf set. And I mean, it was crazy. It was like an entire line of beer. It was, you know, Big and Small Goose, Big and Small Creek, Big and Small Framboise, Iris, Cuvée de Saint-Gilloise, St. Laminus, like all of it, just all there. And, you know, people would walk by and be like, I'm not paying $36 for that. Fuck that.
Yeah. That was before they were trading them online.
Yeah. Yeah. But to see the market kind of shift and all these breweries start to open up and operate and.
Well, let's talk about one thing that you did that, you know, still gets a lot of play today.
Yeah.
Because I actually don't know the backstory of it, but let's talk about Black Friday and Goose Island BCS.
That's sort of my legacy, I guess.
Yeah. So for the listeners that don't know, I'm sure they all know what Goose Island Bourbon County Stout is. But, you know, when I, like 10 years ago when I opened Patty Long's, it was not a popular beer, to be honest with you. And I would put it on tap and it would sit there for months. And, you know, I would buy a case and that was good for the year. You know, and I was probably selling it for $8 a bottle or something.
God, I missed the $9.99 four packs.
Yeah, and that was, you know, $8 a bottle for a bottle of beer 10 years ago was, you know, it just wasn't going to sell.
Yeah. 120 minute was like that, too. When I bought cases of that, I got yelled at for that, too.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to buy a $10 bottle, a 12-ounce bottle. I'm sorry, go ahead. It's just funny how no one thinks about that.
Right. Yeah. But there was no release date for BCS back then. There was no hype around it, really, except amongst, you know, the hardcore nerds, and of which there weren't that many. Then suddenly, this Black Friday phenomenon. Why don't you give us the rundown?
Yeah, so Bourbon County, like you said, was a beer that was just something I always had in stock. I would buy 30 or 40 or 50 cases and, you know, get some weird looks. Because it didn't come out on a specific day. It was usually Q3 or Q3 of the year that it would come out. But it was in this old cardboard packaging with like an ornate font on it, like the old Matilda and Pérignac packaging, and it had it looked more like a brand from the barrel. It was kind of cool, and it was great beer. I still think the 2008 vintage is the best one they've ever done, but I digress. So in 2010, it would have been 2010. Greg Hall shuffles himself into the store one day. And he's just like, hey, we have this thing. I was like, what's this thing? He's like, well, we're calling it Bourbon County Rare. It's like, okay. He goes, it's Bourbon County that we aged in these special barrels. I think he said Pappy Van Winkle barrels at the time. I'm sure he did because that's how it was marketed.
Yeah, that's it was, yeah.
Yeah, and Pappy Van Winkle 23-year-old barrels. And we're going to do a limited run of it in Bombers. I was like, great. He's like, how much do you want? And I was like, I'll buy all of it because... why not? You know, go big or go home. And then he was like, it's really expensive. I was like, well, how expensive? He's like, we're looking at a $42.99 price point for the bottle, for a single bottle. I was like, 22 ounce? He goes, yeah. I'm like, great. Let's fucking do it. I think those are my exact words, was let's fucking do it. And Greg left, and I was sitting there going, holy shit, what did I just commit to? Because we still had Bourbon County from the last year still sitting on the floor. We had done Night Stalker, which was a different recipe Imperial Stout. I think it was like a 9% stout earlier in the year. I still had cases of that. And we'd done cases of Big John, which was another Imperial Stout that they were fucking around with cacao nibs in it. And so I called the beer buyer at the time, the corporate beer buyer, who at Binny's, and we didn't really get along too well, but I called him and I was like, hey, I just got us an exclusive with Goose Island for this thing. And he wasn't really happy about it, which is sort of the untold secret of this whole thing. He was pretty pissed off. There was weird bad blood between Binny's and Goose for a while because of the Sam's connection. Because Sam's was right across the street from Goose Clyburn. We didn't mention that, but that the same at the flagship Binny's. And so it's just weird. It's a relationship-based business, and when your neighbor's right next door, you're going to talk to your neighbor more than you're going to talk to the person down the street kind of thing. Anyway, so I made this deal. And he wasn't super thrilled about it. So then I was like, well, how can I do this worse? So I called Goose, and I was like, what else you got coming out this year? And they're like, well, we made Bourbon County with vanilla, too. I was like, cool, I'll buy a pallet of that, too, and I want a pallet of Bourbon County, and I want a pallet of whatever else you've got released this year. which was tenacious.
Aggressive, yeah.
And so... I sat down with Greg and with Eric Hobbs, who was the market manager at the time for Goose, who went on to found Penrose and is now at Solemn Oath. But We sat down.
What year was this, by the way? Was
2010.
This
like 2010. Okay. Yeah. And truthfully, I don't know who came up with the idea of Black Friday. I would love to say it was me, just because for years previous, that day had always been completely dead in liquor sales. Nobody gives a shit at retail for retail liquor, because you buy all of your liquor and wine and everything before Thanksgiving, not after.
Yep.
Right.
And so I don't know if I threw that date out. I don't know if Greg did. I don't know if Greg inceptioned me. I don't know what happened. But either way, the name Black, or the date of the day after
Maybe
Thanksgiving.
Maybe we'll find out in Josh Noel's new book.
Josh won't tell me what the answer is or what he wrote about it. No, because he totally interviewed me for the book. And he doesn't
want you to ruin buy the book. That's what he's
doing. Buy the book. Yeah.
If you want the answer to what you did.
This segment is brought to you by Josh Noel's book. but anyway, so we settled on Black Friday, and I remember making a Beer Advocate event for it. So Beer Advocate, you know, the website, you could make events for it. And I remember this was probably August, maybe September, and I made an event on there and submitted an event page, and it's just kind of like, come taste all this stuff and buy this beer. And I started getting messages on Beer Advocate being like, hey, is this going to be a popular event kind of thing? I was like, I have no idea. And I started freaking out about it. I'm like, not sure. I was like, what the hell did I just commit to? You know, I just bought a house this last year, and the amount of beer I just purchased was about a quarter of the cost of that house for one drop. And I was starting to freak out a little bit. And then it got picked up by the news. I remember at least one newspaper writing about it, and they weren't writing about the beer or the fact that it was aged in Pappy Van Winkle barrels or the fact that it was this big event. All they were writing about was the $42.99 price point. Huh. There was a news reporter that came in and interviewed me. I don't think they used the footage, but they went to a bunch of bars and then interviewed John Hall. It was like the morning news. It was like CBS or ABC. I don't know what news, whatever. Anyway, they interviewed him, and this camera guy and reporters going around to bars, going up to, you know, man on the street, would you pay $42.99 for a bottle of beer? And I'm like, fuck that. No, never. I'd never pay that. And it was so funny.
By the way, I turned down the case that I was allocated that year.
Did you really?
Of course. I was Patty Long's. I was like, yeah, what am I going to, I'm going to charge $100 for a bottle of beer at Patty Long's?
Yeah. I think that's part of why I got.
I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, oh no, you can keep that. I'll just get my regular BCS, please.
Yep.
Stupid me.
So, I mean, there's no way to tell. That's the thing. Like, especially on an on-premise thing, because, you know, on-premise pricing is different from off-premise pricing. So if I'm at 42, on-premise pricing, mm-hmm. you're looking at either dollars in or percentage of cost. And to match those numbers to labor and overhead, et cetera, it's more expensive at on-premise. So I don't think you made a wrong choice at that time. But anyway, it was great for me, because I ended up with 120 cases. So I was like, fucking great. But So we got closer to Thanksgiving, and I started sweating bullets a little bit. I didn't get a ton of support. I got a little bit of support from corporate, but this was kind of me driving it, and I did okay. I mean,
were they kind of looking at you, like, leading up to it? Like, are you sure about this?
Everyone was kind of freaking out about it. I actually called Eric Hobbs.
Was other liquor store involved, or just the Lincoln Park?
Just Lincoln Park. I mean, there were a couple cases that went here and there to other stores. I think like South Loop got a couple cases, a couple other accounts in the city.
Did people line up?
Yeah. So I was getting to that. it was the night before. I went to a Thanksgiving dinner at a vegetarian's house, and I brought Monk's Cafe. I remember this so distinctly, but it was weird. There was no meat. It was like tofurkey and gravy and stuffing, and I was just sitting there kind of sweating bullets the whole time because I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. I had to get up at 7 a.m. and I'm not a morning, or 6 a.m. and I'm not really a morning person. And I remember calling Eric Hobbs that night being like, did I fuck up? What are we going to do if we don't sell all this beer? And he's like, we'll pick it up. It's fine. I was like, all right, we're going to, I mean, like, I'm freaking out. Just freaking out. And so I get up in the morning and I head down, and there's like 300 people just standing
in
line to get in. And I had made, like, they had made this huge poster, and I had said I didn't know what allocations of product would be until I gauged it by how many people showed up. And so, and the poster, and really, it's the only, I think of all my Binnie's career, the only thing I really fucked up was not taking that poster with me. I should have taken it. It's still in the back room at Vinny's, but it's this giant poster that's like the matte green color with the bottle, and it just says 6 bottles per customer that I hand wrote on there. And so your allocation was 6 bottles of rare, 2 bottles of vanilla, 2 bottles of, I think it was barley wine that year or something, and then however much Bourbon County you wanted to buy. And I mean, remember, I mean, you can do the math. These were 12 bottle cases, $42.99 a bottle.
Oh.
We made a ridiculous amount of money that day. And we sold everything. We sold 110 of those cases in about 2.5 or 3 hours. We had Bourbon County left at the end of the day. I had already started the cellar program. So I stashed 10 cases for out of town customers, industry people like brewers and brewery owners and things like that had called me. Were like, I'm going to be in town. Can you, you know, set a case or two aside for, you know, I held stuff back for people.
Yeah.
And, so that's kind of how it happened. And then the next year, you know, like July, I got the phone call being like, so we're going to do, I'll give you an exclusive story if we have time actually. But the next year we're going to do these variants and what do you want to do? I was like, let's do it again. I still have product from last year that I held. And then I did the raffle thing where it wasn't an actual raffle because you didn't have to pay for it. It was totally optional. But if you showed up and got in line, you'd get a ticket. And then if you stayed afterwards, you could buy your allocation of beer. And then I raffled off variants from the previous year. And I did that every year until I left.
And now it's
a global thing.
Yeah.
They went national with it in 2015. So I quit Binny's June 1st of 2015. Goose took the reins over a little bit out of their hands a little, or at least decided to change the marketing tract of it and went and made it national. And then it went global this year, which was astonishing.
Yeah, and now it's not just Goose that's doing
everybody's
these.
Everybody's doing it.
Everybody seems to be doing these types of releases. I mean, Goose had to be the first, or certainly the first in the area. I don't know if there were other breweries that had these types of releases.
I don't know of any other.
There were brewery only releases before that, like obviously Dark Lord Day.
Not on
Black Friday.
Not on Black Friday, and certainly not at a liquor store like that.
Yeah. Right.
That was the first.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's you know, my annual Goose Island Bourbon County tapping. That year, I mean, that's how I kind of found out it was even a thing. All of a sudden, I had a line out the door.
I remember. Yeah. I remember,
you know, which
that.
I never had before.
Because I was walking home from work that day. I swear to God, because I
and
was
people
like,
were
and there was
clamoring.
A
lot,
there was like a huge line in the, you know, to Patty's, which is traditionally just a neighborhood, and I love it, neighborhood pub. I don't mean any, like, not usually.
Yeah, watch what you say, Bruce, okay?
And I was like, what is going on? And I made it inside, and you were like, it's crazy.
Crazy. I know. That was the first time we ever had a line. Yeah. So I took a bottle and with little shot glasses, because Patty Long's literally had never had a line for anything except St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And those people, you just, you know,
green beer.
Feel sorry for them.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the people waiting in line for that. So I was like, oh, you know, so I went out with a bottle and like gave everyone a little, you know, shot of the beer and everything. And I was just amazed that people were finally willing to wait in line for a beer that literally no one had any, you know, had very much interest in before that.
It used to just sit on the shelf.
It's
just so funny.
And it's always been one of my top five beers. I have, by the way, currently 150 top five beers, but that is one of them, man. I mean, I really have always liked that beer since first time I tasted it. And
It's so good. It really is.
It's
everything that a barrel aged beer should be. They did a fantastic job. I've had the pleasure of being at the brewery when they've been mashing in on the old system, and you can hear the fucking everything creak, all the metal creak from just how much malt they're throwing.
Just like maxing out the.
It's such an inefficient beer. It's so good, but honestly, it's that kind of thing that makes it what it is. You know.
Yeah.
And now we even have we have some BCS schnapps in the house at Kaiser Tiger now.
Do you really? I haven't had that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think some got infected. Yeah, wow. I think and we've all heard that story.
Yep.
So they distilled it, and it's fantastic. They did it with Ryan Hall Distillery, which is down the street from Goose. And
I would like to try that before I leave.
Oh, we'll do that for sure. Amazing. Yeah, that's done. Yeah. Well, yeah, we don't have a ton of time left. Let's get back to your current job.
Oh, yes, public.
And... and this is a nice segue. I'm the master of the segue on this show, by the way. How do you go from basically buying everything, you know, from saying, yes, I'll take it all, to what you're doing now, which is a very select, you know, not, you know, the publican is, you know, in, I don't get out much, but for me, it's the best beer restaurant I've ever been to, beer-focused restaurant.
Thank you.
But it's a very select, small, you know, you don't have 100 taps, thank God.
Nope.
You don't have 400 bottles, you know, thank God. So how do you, what's your focus and how are you directing that beer there?
It's, you know, it's tough. I like to steep it very much in tradition and in the traditional, and I mean that in every sense of the term. I mean, we, you know, Orval will always be on the menu there. Westmalle will always be on the menu there. Our Pilsners are generally German. Our Hefeweizens are German. You know, our Saisons are more often than not Belgian. Like, it's kind of what we do. But I also...
Which is going against trend right now.
Very much so. It's... Mm-hmm. As more and more craft breweries have come online, it's great. I love to see it. I love to see the variety. They need to offer something that is just exquisite. You know, Publican is, as far as I'm concerned, the best of the best for what... For what somebody's doing. That's kind of how I look at it. There's a lot of beer that I like that I don't consider the best beer in the world. I don't have the luxury of having 150 top fives. You know what I mean? I love so many of them, but it doesn't mean I'm going to put them on. And very early in my publican career, I remember we were talking. I think it was after, I don't even remember where it was, but you and I were talking, and you kind of made a comment about, like, good luck saying no a lot more. And you were so very right.
It's
a very, very different experience than what I had previously.
How much does food... So Publican, for those of you who haven't been there, and I'm going to blow smoke, but I'm sincere about it. It's one of my favorite restaurants in the city, and also was... I would say one of the first experiences I've had, now that there's kind of some restaurants that are trying to do the same thing, but I think that was one of the first kind of these elevated shared plates, Midwestern, I would say.
Farm to table.
Yeah, farm to table. Yep. With the beer focus, like Pat said.
And it's certainly the first fine dining restaurant with a beer focus that I knew of.
With a focus, I'll tell you this. I think one of the first fine dining restaurants that ever had a craft beer was Blackbird, which was also part of One Off.
Right,
That predates me, even being in Chicago.
But I imagine the food drives your decision making in a lot of ways.
It absolutely does. I'm a suburban white kid from outside of DC. I grew up on margarine and Kraft mac and cheese and things like that. So coming to food in such a different way now is, it's invigorating to kind of understand how such a connection to that. I mean, that's why I'm staging in the kitchen and working and constantly asking questions and learning why this works with this. I have I don't mean to toot my own horn. I have a good palate, so I understand flavor, I understand combinations, and I understand beer pairings exceptionally well, and I love presenting them because of that. But to have a deeper connection to the food, it has a very drastic influence on how I buy. And it's very seasonal too. I mean, because we are farm to table and constantly go into the farmer's market every day to pick up whatever produce or whatever we're doing, I match what I'm putting on tap and even some of the bottles, which don't change as much, to what's coming in. If I know we're getting a big run of persimmons, I'm going to grab some sort of saison that's a little bit drier because I think those things work so well together. You know what I mean? If we're going to be doing more citrus in the summer, I'll bring in something light and maybe a little hoppier and fruitier to kind of match that. If we're really fish heavy or something Japanese is somebody's just going all apeshit for dashi powder or fish sauce or whatever, you know, I'll bring in something that's like super old that you wouldn't expect to see on the menu, or like an old Imperial Stout, like the Courage Imperial Russian Imperial Stout, the 2012 vintage, that's always on the menu because it's such an amazing pairing for anything that has just a like mushroomy, umami kind of character. And that's not necessarily something I would have had on before. So the selection process is influenced by that, but I also like to think that maybe they're a little influenced by me too. My approach to beer is just so much more holistic. I'm not a numbers guy. I'm a feel guy. You know, I can do numbers now. I've had to teach myself how to do it. But, you know, I go by feel, and I balance the list based upon I have sour, I have malty, I have funky, I have earthy, I have weird, I have normal, I have all this stuff. What fits in that category now? And then I got to think about all the different stuff that's in the market. And I spend a good amount of time digging through catalogs and just thinking about, I think back really to some of the earliest beers that I had on my shelf that I brought in at Sam's and at Binny's, like Blaugies or Brewery de Havemann, like the Bruges Zot, or like these classic Belgian beers, these classic flavors that just, they match that sort of attention to detail that we have coming out of the kitchen. And then, of course, I have to flip my brain completely when I go to Anchor and do that list, or at the airport where I do that list, or where.
Yeah, let's talk about the airport, because, you know, obviously people coming into Publican and Publican Anchor, they know what they're getting into. They're there, you know, for a reason. But the airport's a different story, right? It's just people traveling, and it's literally the widest swath of humanity you can put together in one place. You
77
know?
Million people walking past that every year.
Yeah, with nothing in common. Right? There's no demographic at the airport.
No
it's
way.
Everyone.
There's one thing that everybody has in common. They fucking hate traveling.
That's true.
<They're> not, traveling sucks.
They're not happy. They're trying to get somewhere. Yeah, that's true.
And what we really try to bring there, and I'm not going to lie, I'm exceptionally proud of what we've done out there. You know, we try to bring that little slice of hospitality to that travel experience, because travel does suck. And I mean, you could go to Chili's next door and grab an $8 Sam Adams if you want, but you can come into Publican and pay the same amount of money or $2 more and get an Orval with our pub chicken, you know? And I mean, I have Orval at the airport, which is just, that makes me, I mean, I can't even describe what that feels like every time I see one of those go out. And we have servers that, you know, they've put so much heart into learning what we do. Because it's just it's a very different world out there. But to see our servers pour an Orval so beautifully and then say, would you like to keep the yeast in or out? It's just so cool. It's just so neat.
What's the reaction been?
It's been great. We got a bunch of accolades. Draft wrote us up for stuff. USA Today wrote us up for stuff. Industry people have reached out a lot. Because, you know, in this industry and in the beer industry, reps are flying back and forth between breweries and so on. And
I've seen many, many Facebook posts from friends drinking Orval at the bar at the Publican and the airport going, oh, my God, I can't believe I can finally get a good beer at an airport.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, what's funny is that O'Hare wasn't the first one. In fact, O'Hare was actually a little slower to come into craft beer other than Terminal 5, the international terminal. And it's just I think it was just a fear of change, or like the larger you are, the slower it takes, or the longer it takes to move the ship, you know? But you know, they trust us, and they're just kind of letting us run with it. I mean, I have Gumball Head on tap at the airport.
I mean, there's an actual term that we used to use called airport beer. And it was, you know, it mostly came up in conversations about Sam Adams, like, oh, why can't Sam Adams Lager sell at Patty Long's? Well, it's an airport beer, you know. It's good. Everyone likes it. It's a quality beer.
It is. I used to buy.
But it's ubiquitous, right? So that's what kind of airport beer meant. It meant, you know, it's something you can get at the airport. So it doesn't interest people looking for something unusual. And you are literally turning that upside down, you know. I'm pretty sure the only other airport you can get an Orval in is probably in Belgium.
I looked for it when I was at the Brussels airport this year, and I couldn't find it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to.
Do like a beer menu search or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I try to.
I was in Brussels with my wife once, and, you know, there's always a fine, you know, balance between me dragging her to a brewery and her dragging me to a museum, you know? And not that I'm not, you know, I like museums,
you're
some
cultured
of them.
Man.
Right, but I'm not that cultured, really. And we were at the art museum in Brussels, you know, and I like art. Let's not bash art. Okay. But art museums to me are boring. And I look at a picture for a couple of seconds and I move on. And she's obviously a much better person than me, and she likes to stare. So, we're in there for about an hour, and I'm like, oh Jesus, how long? We're like a quarter of the way through the brewery, or through the the museum.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm gonna get something in the cafeteria, and the cafeteria was stocked with a bunch of fantastic Trappist beer.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You're like, we can stay here for the rest of the day.
Yeah, 2 hours later, wife found me. She's like, oh, okay, now I get it.
You know what's funny is I had the distinct pleasure and honor of visiting Orval last month.
You just got back from a great trip, huh?
Yep, I was out in Germany and Belgium for 2 weeks. Mostly work trip, visiting breweries. I was brewing a beer, one of our collaboration beers, in Germany. And
with who?
Freigeist.
Oh, yeah, yep. Yeah. Berlin, right?
Cologne.
Cologne, okay.
Yep. All right. Sebastian's a friend. When he was in the States last year, I met him, and the Pipeworks people brought him in to Publican, and he fell in love with it. We became buddies. We ended up going to a metal show together afterwards, and then he came in and ate dinner again the next night. And we were talking about brewing, and as soon as I realized I was heading out there, we made a beer. But getting back to Orval, to be able to go to Orval, and for those that don't know, you failed. Go get an Orval. But it's one of the most incredible beers in the world. It's a Trappist beer. It's been brewed since 1931, and it's basically the only beer that the monastery produces. They make a small beer for the monks, which I did try.
How is it?
It was good.
It's not Orval, though.
It's not Orval, but it's good.
Everyone always wants to try these singles, and then it's like, this is what they drink all day,
Yeah. But going there, it was really cool, and it's amazing to think that you're drinking Orval in an art museum in Brussels, and I have it on an airport menu at one of the busiest airports in the world, and that you can find it at every liquor store in Chicago, just about, and in most of the good liquor stores across the country. It's all over, they export to Japan and China, and Canada and Italy and France and Germany and all of these places. And they only have 6 regular fermenters, like 6 standard first fermentation fermenters. I was shocked. It was just amazing at how small that is. And when you think about all of the breweries that are just setting themselves up to expand and expand and expand and expand and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow, it's so refreshing to find a brewery, even if they're monastery related, that just like, nah, we're not going to get any bigger. We're good. And that was, it was pretty cool. It was really neat to see.
Yeah, I guess that's probably one of the only things we can chalk up to a good thing for monastic living, huh? No, there's many things that are good for monastic living, but we don't want to bring up Vav's religious views.
No way.
an ardent atheist, yes, it's, it can only happen in that kind of environment where greed doesn't take over. And it even does sometimes in the Trappist world. There's a lot of Trappist monasteries that aren't happy with a lot of this beer production because they feel it's more than they need. And the whole Trappist ethos is only make what you need.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So interesting. Very interesting. How are we doing on time? We're just about there.
Yeah.
But first, I do want to know what this beer is you made and when we can try it at Publican. Do you have any idea?
So it doesn't really have a style. The idea was kind of something to match our chicken, our famous chicken, but also...
Oh, that chicken's good.
It's so amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But something that you can... like that would be like beer that you would drink 200 years ago. And so what we did was we basically took Pilsner malt, smoked malt, a little bit of caramel malt, pale malt, mashed with that, and then added 200 kilograms of German black bread from a little bakery down the street from the brewery, like literally down the driveway. It's this, he's brewing at this amazing brewery called Forman, V-O-R-M-A-N-N, which is in this little mountain hamlet called Hagen, about an hour northeast of Cologne. And it's just this tiny little German mountain town, and it's a fourth generation brewery. So he learned from his dad, and you know, learned all the way back since 1877. And at the bottom of the driveway is this little bakery that has been there probably just as long. I don't know. It was definitely a family that was in there when we went down there to get bread. So we threw this 200 pounds or 200 kilograms of bread into the mash, and then we made a sourdough culture using their sourdough for the fermentation, and then did an open fermentation in an old cast iron. It looks like a giant cast iron bathtub with a little copper worm that you can run water through to, you know, equalize the temperature of the fermentation. So it's an open fermentation, and then it'll get, it was both sourdough culture and pitched with his house strain, and then, yeah, it'll get kegged off, and we'll hopefully, and there will be bottles, too. It'll be here, hopefully, March.
Wow. All right. So that's going to be an interesting
watch out for
beer.
That. Yeah. Does it have a name yet?
It does. Bread Zeppelin. just about every yes. collaboration beer I've done
yes.
at Publican has to have a music-related thing.
Oh, that's great.
I love the beer puns. They're the best.
That chicken, by the way, I feel like before my first time at the Publican, the server was like, I was like, what do you recommend? And she was like, you've got to get the chicken. And in a place like that where it's a little fine dining with a lot of different things on the menu, I feel like a lot of times chicken is just kind of a add-on for picky eaters who won't, or people
as
who
a
don't
restaurant
like
owner, it, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And then
usually I don't recommend ordering it because it's always dry.
And then it's amazing.
Yep.
It's so good.
Ours is very different. You can find the recipe yourself in the Publican cookbook that came out recently.
This is plug time.
Nailed it. Yeah. But it's such a simple recipe at the end of the day. It's just a little time consuming. It's salted and marinated. It's the espalette pepper that does it. And then wood fire grill. Finished in the oven. I mean, it's cool. It's awesome.
Anything else going on at Publican we should know about, or any of the affiliates?
We'll be doing an uppers and downers event on February 22nd over at Publican Anchor. We're doing a decaf event, so most of the breweries that are bringing in coffee beer for uppers and downers will be doing non-coffee beer over there, and we'll probably have some bites with that. For any of you California listeners, Southern California listeners, I also made a beer with Firestone Walker. And so you're hearing it first here. We are, and everybody does tap takeovers, and I don't find them fun. They're just not interesting. So when we were trying to figure out what to do with it, I was like, fuck it, let's do a kitchen takeover. So myself and a couple of the chefs are going to be flying out to Firestone and taking over their kitchen and doing Publican there to release this beer. I don't have an exact date on that, but follow our Publican social media.
Yeah, if you're in California, trust us, go to that.
Yeah.
Because these are some talented chefs over there.
We need a sponsor to send us there for that.
It's a work research trip, right?
Yeah.
Why are you looking at me? I need a sponsor. How about the Chicagoland Beer Tour?
Yeah, right.
Sponsor us over there.
Oh,
and what's going on with Chicagoland Beer Tour? See that segue? I'm the master.
We're still touring. You know, we tour in the wintertime. I've tweaked the loop tour now, so it's a little bit of a shorter walk in the wintertime, and still have a lot of great beers to taste and a lot of kind of Chicago's history to learn. So to me, Chicago's history is the most interesting pre-1900. It's really the 1800s history that I just really nerd out on. So we've got a lot of that kind of covered. And Chicago was like the Wild West, you know, back in those days. So it's just wild what was happening. And so we talk a lot of that and rocking and rolling. And then we'll be back with a more full schedule starting in March for the other tours.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Great.
How about you?
Yeah, what's going on over here?
I am going down to St. Louis this weekend for second shift's, I think it's called Cask Event or something. I should probably look up this event that I'm going down to see, because my mom was like, what time is that? I
had Cask, no idea. Huh?
Yes, I know. Yeah, well, you know. Went in Rome. I'm making a beer with them, a Hefeweizen.
Nice.
We're calling it OG Haze Craze.
Nice.
My first very, hazy very nice. Beer. Yes.
I saw that on Facebook. I was going to comment, yeah. And I just didn't. I just let it go.
But I do want to talk about.
You can always call it an IPA because yeah. Apparently you can do that. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. We'll talk about that off. And January 19th, Patty Longs will be having our annual Bourbon County Stout release.
Nice.
So
I'm coming to that for sure. Yeah.
I have bottles. It was always my favorite beer, and I was into cellaring beer, so I'm opening the whole cellar, and I have a bottles going back to 2008. With the fancy script that Vav was talking about, and you say that's the best vintage.
I think 08 was the best vintage, yeah. And you have to remember that
I only have two bottles for sale. I'm going to say that now, and I'm charging an outrageous amount of money because, you know, for two reasons: one, someone might pay it, and two, I don't really want to sell them.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Might as well, if you don't sell them, you'll kind of be happy about it.
I will not shed a tear. Yeah. So come on out. We have bottles from every year.
How many bitcoins?
Going back to 2000.
Oh, yeah. Are you taking cryptocurrency for these now? Here, that's all the rage. Yeah.
Man, I'm barely figuring out credit cards. You think I got to take a bitcoin? What the hell are you talking about? Bring your cash. So that is January 19th, Friday. Should be always a good time. And we have a bunch of the variants on draft. It'll be fun. I want to thank Adam Vavrick
again. Thank you so much.
I know you got a meeting you got to get to.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
It is absolutely our pleasure. We're going to have you back, and we'll talk about not you this time, but maybe some, because you and I like to get into it.
We very much do.
We do. Yeah. And everyone listening to this is going to be like, oh, man, they didn't even get into it.
Not at all. See, that's the big secret, is that we're actually friends.
We are,
yeah. We respect each other's opinions. Yeah.
Despite what you might see on Facebook. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And again, beeropinions.com. Tell your friends. And
iTunes.
And
review us.
Review us, yes, and send us emails. Thanks to an email from a avid listener, I assume he's an avid listener, we will be doing a live taping. Is that an oxymoron? We're going to be taping live from the Chaos Brew Club's
I'm pumped.
Stout Chili Cook-Off. It's going to be great.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm really excited.
Very excited. It's going to be great. One of our recordings at a festival. So if you can't hear anything, that's why. It's not our fault.
Yeah.
But I think with our new setup, it's going to be great and very excited. So tune in next time.
Yeah.
When we're live from the Chaos Stout Chili Cook-Off.
All right.